You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. Happy Friday. We hope that your day is off to a great start. If you are in Wisconsin Rapids listening on WFHR or in Hayward on WBZH or even in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, thank you for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We can't just change formats for like 4 minutes and let that song play out.
We should. Absolutely.
Do you want to?
It's a great song.
talk to the bosses.
Guys,
just a quick reminder, if you're in central Wisconsin, tonight after 5 o'clock, severe storms possible again.
Yeah.
From Green Bay down to, Madison. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little further south, but just be careful tonight while you're enjoying the beginning of your weekend. And at any point, you can jump in. We had some more people jumping in late on our last topic, but try to get in early. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842 is our number. Let's check some headlines from overseas because, yes, as of tomorrow, we will be in a seven-week-old war. Hours after a 10-day truce in Lebanon began, the Lebanese army accused Israel of violating the ceasefire. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu previously said Israeli forces would not withdraw from positions in southern Lebanon. An Iran-backed Hezbollah warned it would only cease fire if Israeli attacks stopped.
Also in headlines this morning, President Trump said a White House meeting between Israel and Lebanon could take place within 2 weeks. The conflict with Hezbollah has...
Just once could he say a different timetable? 3.5 weeks, 21 days.
It's like he just quick picks something out of his head and always comes in at 2 weeks. I'm not sure what it is. But the conflict with Hezbollah has been a key sticky point in negotiations on the war with Iran. Trump also voiced confidence that a deal with Tehran will come soon, saying talks could happen this weekend.
Everything. Anyway, the leaders of Britain and France will host a virtual meeting of world leaders from 40 countries today to discuss efforts to reopen the vital trade checkpoint of the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't think we are invited.
I don't believe the U.S. is. Because this was supposed to be basically the non-bombastic meeting, right?
Of world leaders. This is not going to go well for us. All right, listen, things haven't changed. We're still in a war. Depending on who you want to believe, the facts or the president, you will know that it doesn't seem like the war is winding down, or it'll be done in 14 days. I'm just going to change up the verbiage
because
I'm so tired of saying two weeks. Everything is 2 weeks.
Yes.
Parker, do some math for me. Not right now, but give me it in hours, minutes, seconds. So that we can use different verbiage for that.
God.
But right now, we don't have time for you to be doing math, Parker. We have to talk about some S we need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Well, this is interesting. Pabst Brewing can be held liable for workplace injuries under a safe place statute. The brewing company could be liable for injuries to an independent contractor that he suffered while on the job and may pay out damages after a decision from the Wisconsin Supreme Court on Wednesday. The ruling implies that employers broadly are responsible for maintaining a certain level of workplace safety, as spelled out under a unique Wisconsin law, even for independent contractors whose overall work is subject to different requirements. The case stems from the death of Gerald Lorabecki, a steam fitter who was exposed to asbestos while working at a Pabst brewery. The lawsuit, which was filed before his death and carried on by his estate after he died of cancer, alleged that the release of asbestos over the course of his work was a violation of Wisconsin's Safe Place statute. Now, that law is a relic of Wisconsin's progressive era in the 20th century. It holds that employers must maintain a safe workplace, doing, quote, every other thing reasonably necessary to protect the life, health, safety, and welfare of such employees and frequenters, end quote. So in this case, attorneys for Pabst argued that because they were not Lorbecki's employer and did not control the day-to-day of his work as they would for a regular employee, they were also not responsible for decisions that he made that exposed him to asbestos. I would be interested to hear their case on what decisions he made
right.
that exposed him, and if there were decisions that would have not exposed him, or if the entire workplace just showing up to work exposed him to asbestos. Because that, if that's the case, you gotta look and go, well, it's Wisconsin. That's the law. And if you put somebody in harm's way, then you are responsible. But it's going to be interesting to follow this along.
And I mean, honestly, I think however this plays out, it's a big deal for Wisconsin workers, because this could essentially set a precedent for that people shouldn't be overlooking. We have Christopher chiming in over on the text line from Beaver Dam, listening on WISS. He says, instead of 2 weeks, we should say fortnight. Use Fortnite instead. There we go. I like that. Right. Oh, Parker did the math for you as well. Do you see this?
I hope he did. Yes. 336 hours, 20,160 minutes. We'll start using all these. I like Fortnite sounds very, except then people go, it's making a game.
Can I tell you something real quick here?
Yes, you can.
For whatever reason, I was thinking Fortnite, it was like a baker's dozen. I was thinking it was like 16 days instead of 12. And so I looked it up, and it defaulted to Fortnite the game, and it told me that a Fortnite is 20 minutes long. I'm like, no, it's not.
No, that can't be right.
No.
Maybe a game. Right. Maybe a game of Fortnite is 20 minutes
long.
Maybe that's what it means.
The world is being dumbed down. One Google search at a time.
In other headlines this morning with stuff you need to know, Supreme Court weighing in on politics once again. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas earlier this week, in fact, on Wednesday, he delivered a televised broadcast. There
televised
we go.
Televised broadside.
There we go. Right. Words this morning were not coinciding in my brain against progressivism.
You're in vacation mode.
I am. Thank you for the help there.
That's why you're building a shirt.
We'd still be sitting here, and I'd still be trying to get it out. He talked about progressivism as a political philosophy that he described as an existential threat to America and the principles that founded it 250 years ago. Now, in this address, he said, quote, "Progressivism seeks to replace the basic premises of the Declaration of Independence and hence our form of government." This was at a speech he was giving at the University of Texas Austin Law School, which talking about the nation's upcoming milestone birthday. "A spirit of cynicism, rejection, hostility, and animus toward America by Americans has taken hold," Thomas said in remarks that were carried live on C-SPAN. Now, he also said that the Supreme Court senior conservative, as the Supreme Court senior conservative member, he was speaking broadly, not referencing anything specific as far as contemporary events or political figures to make this particular case. But his comments come at a very critical time for a very sharply divided country, as well as a sharply divided court. He went on to say that the values enshrined in the 1776 Declaration of Independence have fallen out of favor among Americans, a trend perpetrated, he argued, by intellectuals and the nation's colleges and universities. Mind you, he's speaking at a university giving these comments. Now, he also said he believes that many people no longer believe all men are created equal and deserving of unalienable rights protected by a limited government. Whoa. All right.
I think he's got this all mixed up. Let me read. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." We've heard that all before. That's the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. Progressives do believe all men are created equal, which is why they fight for equal rights, which is why they try to protect the rights of marginalized groups, which is why they are empathetic, because we believe that they are enshrined with life. So they fight for programs that help people live. Everything he is complaining about sounds like his party and the MAGA and conservative movement. Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it absolutely does. And here's the thing that I think bothers me most about this is we all know that this man sits on the Supreme Court. This is somebody who is making decisions for all of us in his rulings. And it doesn't according to these comments, now I'm never going to pretend I know what happens behind closed doors and in their chambers. According to these comments, though, it doesn't sound like Justice Thomas is taking the Constitution into effect or into even thought when he's making decisions that are affecting large, large groups of people. And if you are not appalled by that, then I think you need to go back and read more of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, because our justices are supposed to rule based on the Constitution and what is set in front of them. And it sounds like he is not doing that based on these comments that he made at a law school in Texas.
And you know what's telling for me, the attack on intellectuals, because yes, somehow if we demonize knowledge and make it seem like if you're too smart, you're not patriotic, you're not backing up the country, then all the mouth breathers who think they can do their own research on Google, and yes, I know that's going to score poorly with the AI. I don't care. If we want a nation that is based on idiocracy, we're working for it. And I don't ever want to live in a place, there's a lot of people a lot smarter than me, and I want to hear from them, and I want them questioning things, and I want them developing scientific miracles, and I want them doing math that I could never, like Parker just figured out how many hours in a fortnight. I want.
But this is hypocritical, because Clarence Thomas is an intellectual. He's
right,
an educated man who is an attorney and a judge.
But he wants his intellectual class to rule. Because if you're smart enough to question him, that leads to you have to then defend your position. And if you're leading a bunch of dopes, they're not going to know enough to answer, and they're just going to defer to what you said. It's like you joke about when you raise your kids to be free thinkers, and then when they free think to you, you're like, oh, no.
Right.
Well, that's kind of the patriarchal mentality that this statement by Clarence Thomas is making, is that same kind of mindset.
Courts are supposed to be independent.
Quick,
yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, because this is big news.
Yeah.
And it's going to affect everybody. Analia Maya has won the special election in New Jersey's 11th district.
Yeah.
That allows Democrats to further narrow Republicans' razor-thin majority. She defeated Republican Joe Hathaway in the special election to fill the seat the remainder of the term of Mikey Sherrill, who was elected governor in November. The win is a boon for progressives, but it also shrinks the House Speaker Mike Johnson's majority. When she is sworn in, Johnson will only be able to afford one single GOP defection on party line votes and still pass legislation. The partisan breakdown will stand at 217 Republicans, 214 Democrats, one independent, and three vacant seats. So this is, I know it's New Jersey, but man, this is going to affect everything, especially in these crucial months leading up to the midterm.
But New Jersey isn't always a slam dunk, depending on what district you're in, as far as being a blue vote. It's safer,
this
but it's not always.
Was,
okay.
And she won by 20 points.
Well,
it was almost the same shellacking as the Supreme Court race here. She won big, and this was a majority blue district and had been before. But it was still an overwhelming vote, and it gives Democrats one more seat.
Yeah, it does. And I wonder if the three seats that are vacant, if there's going to be some race before the midterms to fill those. I think that's going to be interesting to see if the Republicans can get a little bit more of a cushion in their majority.
And will Mike Johnson take a vacation so he doesn't have to swear in? We'll have to watch that, too, because he's not above it. He's done it before.
Nope.
This is not wild theories. All right, when we come back, do you have any last requests? Heavy on a Friday. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. Happy Friday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Do you have any last requests? Plans for after your death? I know it's Friday morning, so we must speak of death. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I brought this up, Jamie, because you sent this story about George Foreman laid to rest in Northwest Iowa, fulfilling a long-held wish. So I thought, well, maybe other people have long-held wishes for after they are gone.
I find this story fascinating only because the area that he where his last request takes place, and we'll get into it in a minute, it is not anywhere that I would ever be like, yes, this is my final spot in life. I was actually a little floored by it. So everybody finds beauty in something, I guess.
Yes. Well, it's in Sioux City, yeah. Iowa. And now you'll say, Brian, fact check, brother. George Foreman was from Texas.
Yes.
Ah, you would be correct. George Foreman was from Texas. He had zero ties to Iowa, but he fell in love with it, with its beauty and peace, when he drove through the state after the Olympics. He just drove through Iowa. And he went, corn, I love it. I'm beautiful. I'm going to get buried here. That was basically it. He never forgot. Never forgot driving through Iowa. And he told family members that's where he wanted to be buried.
This story is fascinating to me because also, now this is not any shade on Sioux City. This is actually a part of their large economy as a local economy.
They have
a lot of processing plants there. Tyson Foods it got several plants there.
Yes.
This is not
the most picturesque.
It's not. It's a little gritty, right? In some places, it smells weird on most days because of the Tyson plants. Like,
it's a little run down because some of the plants are not doing well.
Yeah,
I've been to Sioux City a number of times. You're right. It's not like, but everybody's got their own thing. Maybe to George Foreman, from wherever he was in Texas,
sure,
Sioux City looked like paradise.
It might have. But I found this fascinating reading it today. He actually wanted to be buried in the state in a portion of the state called the Lois Hills. And he often spoke of the area's landscape, and he really just felt this sense of peace that he had during his visit through Iowa. In fact, one of his sons says that he talked about driving through after the Olympics and really after seeing the heart of America, he said, this is what it's all about. Why Iowa is what his family is probably asking.
I wonder if when he stopped to get something to eat near Sioux City, he fell in love with a woman.
Perhaps.
And even from a distance.
Yeah, I don't know.
And just saw her as this thing of beauty and thought, I've never seen a woman as beautiful. Everyone in Sioux City must be the same way. Chris jumps in from Waterloo. He's listening on WXCO. He said, I want my ashes spread at Acadia National Park, one of my favorite places on earth.
Yeah, that's much better than Sioux City. No shade again to Sioux City. I get it. Every town has to do what they have to do.
If the Sioux City folks want to come at us, bring receipts. We've both been to Sioux City. I've spent time there. I've worked there a number of times.
What I love
is... It's fine. It's just not my vision of paradise.
No, absolutely. What I love is that even George Foreman's family doesn't know why, because he actually never told them why Sioux City... But the son says, now we're here and we get to see the hills and see the water and meet the people. And I know exactly why he picked Iowa. No, you don't. You're sitting there going, what the hell was Dad thinking?
But they listened. They honored his wish. Last year when he died, they buried him. And yesterday, on the anniversary of his death, they went back and they installed this giant monument that you can look out and see. You just see the scenery of Iowa. Probably if you're on a hill in Iowa, congrats for finding a hill in Iowa, and unless you're in Council Bluffs, and then you look straight across,
you found the one hill.
There's Colorado. It just followed the curve of the earth.
You found the one hill is what you found in Iowa.
I have told Debbie that when I die, I don't want to be buried. We're not. This is a long held tradition. We are not, as my mom says, cemetery people. We don't go and visit. Our graves and stuff. I know where my dad's buried. I know where my grandparents are buried. But whatever. And I don't. Once I'm gone, I don't expect anybody to come look at a piece of earth. So I said, cremate me, and then take me down and scatter me on neutral ground during Mardi Gras. That's where.
Yeah.
That's where I'm happiest. So that's where I want to be.
We've had that discussion with my mom because my dad was cremated as well when he passed away about 20 years ago. And we've had that discussion with my mom as she gets older, and she wants to also be cremated. She wants no funeral because she doesn't want anybody sitting around crying over her. She doesn't want any funeral. She wants us to have her cremated. She wants us to then take both of their ashes and go out to their favorite fishing lake that they went to together every weekend and spread their ashes together there.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Because here's the thing. When people give you ashes to hang on,
it's weird.
But you're hanging on to them and you don't know what to do with them. And then, then somebody is left with them. Like, I got left with my Uncle Bob's ashes. And I don't know if I got left with them.
Laugh about Uncle Bob.
I loved Uncle Bob. He was married to my dad's only sister, Auntie Kay, and when she died, so we're cleaning out her house, and she wanted to be buried.
Sure.
And Uncle Bob had been cremated, and his box sat in one of the cabinets in the living room of their house until my aunt passed away. And then all of a sudden, I got to figure out what to do with this, and my mom is like, "You got to put it in the casket," but it was this big box. And quick tip: if you're ever going to open remains, they don't put them in a bag inside the container. So I unscrewed the bottom of this box and took it up, Uncle Bob was all over the kitchen, including all over one of my dogs, who then started licking up Uncle Bob.
Oh, no, and then you have to vacuum up Uncle Bob.
I wish I was joking. It was the most terrifying and hilarious night in our house
ever.
Would
Uncle Bob have laughed?
Uncle Bob would have laughed until he got cremated. We put him in a Ziploc bag in a manila envelope and then jammed him in under the lining of the casket with Auntie Kay.
That sounds very appropriate.
Whatever was left that Spike hadn't licked up at the time. All right. Listen, on that note, happy Friday. We're going to be back with more. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy Friday. It is 8:35 right now. And a quick reminder to keep an eye on the weather today in large portions of the state. I know it seems very nice out right now, but we are going to increase temperature pretty rapidly today. Humidity is going to roll in, and we do have a chance for some severe weather across a large portion of the state starting after about 5 o'clock tonight, according to forecasts anyway. We'll see how that plays out. But again, just like we've been saying most of this week, please stay weather aware today, because these storms do have a potential for a lot more rain, thunder, lightning, hail, possible tornadoes, really the same gamut that we've been seeing this week. So we want everybody to be safe. And of course, take precautions wherever you're at if you're already flooded, because it looks like we could see a lot more rain added to what we already have, which is not good.
Man, oh man,
it's been a bad week.
We are harbingers of doom here, but that's what we're dealing with. So we have breaking news we're going to get to in 1 second. I just want to ask you this question so you can start thinking about it and getting your answers in at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Should AI-generated voice calls be illegal for campaigns to use? Give us your opinion on that. But we do have some breaking news. Parker.
Yes.
Our intrepid tech producer is sending us breaking news.
Yes.
Parker, you've got your little fedora on with the press on it. and a lot of people don't know you aspired to be a newsman. No, and then somehow you ended up with us.
My pencil in my ear and ready to go.
All right. Well, we love it. And this is actually a big story coming out of Iran today. U.S. President Donald Trump and Iran's foreign minister said that the Strait of Hormuz is now fully open to commercial vessels, Brian. In fact, Trump went to where he always goes to make big announcements, social media, and he said that Iran announced that the strait is now fully open and ready for full passage. Now, minutes earlier, Iran's foreign minister posted on X that the passage for all commercial vessels through the strait is, quote, declared completely open in line with the ceasefire in Lebanon. He said it would stay open for the remaining period of the ceasefire, which is literally only like a few days.
Till Wednesday.
Okay. It's not immediately clear what that meant for the U.S. blockade to the strait. Now, as you can imagine, coming off of this news, that was good for the markets because, because crude oil prices actually went down by about 10%. And obviously, the markets are now reacting to the news this morning.
Well, I was skeptical till I heard that Iran had actually confirmed this because, and I'm sure the president is going to take full credit for this because I'm sure his blockade is what did it. But maybe Iran is just acting in accordance with the ceasefire.
Yes.
We'll see.
At least somebody is.
Either way, it's open. Either way, we'll take it as good news. It's not going to drop gas prices immediately.
No.
So if you think you're going to fill up, like I have to fill up today, I know my prices are not going to drop drastically, and neither are yours. We'll take what we can get. We'll see. And I, you know, but again, let's clarify. The ceasefire ends next Wednesday, the 22nd,
yeah.
And there are no new talks scheduled, even though from our side, we're being told that the war is almost over.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been told the war is almost over now for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But anyway, that's the breaking news. And we will, you know, Parker's always got his eye on the world. Plus, he had to flex, Jamie. Did you like that? He flexed to me that he gets push notifications on his phone for all big news.
I used to get push notifications from several places, and then it just got annoying. And now I'm just like, I'm just going to check it out myself. I don't need you to tell me.
I get push notifications when Culver's releases a new custard flavor.
Ooh. Those are the important things in life.
Priorities.
Though. Yes.
Lofty goals, Jamie, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you should listen the whole 3 hours.
Or you could go to civicmedia.us. And listen back to all of the hours here for Daybreak. Speaking of AI, John from Oshkosh is already chiming in to answer that question that you posed, whether or not should AI-generated voice calls be illegal for campaigns to use? And he says 100% AI anything for campaigns should be illegal. As with most other things, hasn't everyone seen the Terminator movie? That is a very good point, John.
That's right. It's becoming self-aware. Skynet has become self-aware. Why are we talking about this? Why are we asking you that question? Why do we want you to let us know how you feel at 855-75-CIVIC? Because Chris Taylor, you know, she won the big Supreme Court race last week. She is the Supreme Court Justice-elect. She brings the liberal majority up to 5-2 on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now, before election night, somebody else entered the race, and it was not Maria Lazar. It was not Chris Taylor. It was a virtual assistant powered by artificial intelligence that was texting voters, offering to answer their questions about the election, which with an eye toward helping Taylor. The text would read, "Got any questions about Chris Taylor's record and why it matters?" That's WPR got this and shared it. "I'm a virtual assistant standing by to answer your questions anytime before you head to the polls on Tuesday. Just reply."
Wow.
Now, the group used the in Wisconsin, this group, it was started by a political action group, Defend Our Courts is the one who is trying to stop this. Because they say a group used an AI-powered virtual assistant to target voters identified as quote-unquote undecided across the state. They sent messages that supported Taylor's election. More than 1.1 million people received text, and over 10,000 responded to the text. And so they're trying to get it made illegal for AI to be used in political campaigns. We're getting way too reliant on AI.
Yeah.
We're getting way too comfortable replying to AI.
Yes.
Which just gives it more information.
Plus, a lot of people don't know the difference between AI and reality. And
AI is not always correct.
No, it's
not. There's a lot of videos, if you want to go down a rabbit hole on YouTube, of people asking AI very simple questions.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't...
Like, how many months contain the letter X?
Yeah.
And AI will answer. Then if you try to correct AI, then it will say, "Oh, you're right. There are none." And then say, "Okay, there's
maybe it's
this."
Maybe it's trying to test us to make sure we're smarter than
I
that.
I don't want a machine testing me. I don't want my robot overlords to take over just yet.
When it comes to AI, though, in campaign elections, this is not anything new. In fact, during the 2024 cycle, New Hampshire residents also received AI robocalls that used Joe Biden's voice, who at the time was still president, telling them to skip the state's Democratic primary. It also prompted the Federal Communications Commission to make AI-generated voice calls illegal. Now, here's the thing. I mean, most people probably had no idea they were talking to AI, but I think that's where a lot of us need to be wary, because this essentially, to me anyway, blurs the line between conversation and automated persuasion. And it also blurs the line between real information and influence. And when you start combining that with where trust already is in this country as far as our election process, right, this becomes a major problem, because a lot of us already don't trust the election system. And voters are already skeptical. In fact, about 70% of Americans are really worried about misinformation in campaigns. Mm-hmm. And more than half, according to recent polls, say they don't have a lot of confidence in elections that they're really reflecting the will of the people. So now you add on this weird layer of AI, right? Calling people, giving them information, asking them if they want more information on candidates. I feel like that's a little bit of like adding gas to a fire at that point.
It is, because the reach now is so much better, so much larger than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We can get out all these messages. 1.1 million people receive these texts. That couldn't be done in the past. So now you've got all this. And then if they respond, you just have the opportunity to spread more disinformation. Now, Taylor's campaign did respond to WPR and said they can't control the activity of outside groups in this race, adding that voters should independently examine candidates. Well, that's a pretty safe answer. But if you know that this is happening, I believe you have the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you have the responsibility to talk to these companies and say, listen, or get out in front of it and make a statement. Hey, if you get these texts, they're not from us.
Right.
If you have questions about my campaign, go to my website.
Yep.
You can ask questions there and know that it is direct from the campaign, direct from the candidate. So,
I mean, that
seems like a little bit of a cop-out answer.
People also don't trust AI. I mean, when you look at polling for that either, 13% of people are comfortable letting AI have any sort of big role in our lives. 60% don't trust it, and to be fair or unbiased. No, but I think when it comes to this conversation, there's another piece that I feel like gets missed a little bit, because whatever happened to winning campaigns doing the boots on the ground method of winning, especially here in Wisconsin, right? Because at some point you have to have a human element. You have to go talk to people. You have to do the door knocks. You have to meet them, people, where they're at, to actually understand where they're coming from. That's a grassroots method of winning elections. And we've been really good at that in recent years in Wisconsin. And I would really hate for any candidate to lose touch with voters and think that AI is the way to go, because people want you to actually show up. They want to be listened to. They want to be understood. And AI can't replicate any of that. It can't simulate those conversations. It can't replace that connection that you're going to get. And if campaigns start leaning on that, I think, too heavily, it's going to feel very manufactured and it's going to feel less authentic. And at this stage of where we're at in politics, we need authentic. We don't need fake.
Well, I don't think we're going to lose that
hopefully
door knock or in public, because when we talked to Chris Taylor before the election, she had been all over the state,
of course.
And Maria Lazar had been all over the state. So, but then when we talked about ranked choice elections, that was one of the biggest things. Candidates were out beating the streets, beating the bushes, and knocking on doors and trying to convince people that they were better, whether they were in their party or not. So I don't think we'll ever lose that. And if it is, as Chris Taylor's campaign said, that this other group was just doing it without their knowledge.
Sure.
Okay. So, but to your point, if the campaign is using it to instead of doing this, I'm sure there are ways AI can help. And I'm sure there are ways AI can benefit. But this all goes back to the money in campaigns and in politics. You can't create this AI program without all this dark money coming in. So,
and I think maybe
if you cut off the money, then you cut off the access to this kind of stuff.
And
too.
I think that's the part that scares me, especially when we look at who this current GOP party associates themselves with as far as big donors. It's mostly tech, right? You look at Elon Musk, you look at the Peter Thiels of the world. And I think that's what scares me, because we've seen a real shift in how the current GOP wants to change not only politics, but the campaigning process, the election process. They keep saying that we need to make sure that it's not, that it's fair, that it's not being manipulated, that it's not fake, that it's not all of these words. But at the end of the day, I think things like this scare me even when it's coming from outside groups, because we are at some point looking at losing some parts. And I agree with you. You're never going to lose all of the boots on the ground type feel. But at some point, you're going to start losing some of that authenticity, and you're going to have these groups that are going to try to change participation and try to change people in a way that, I don't know, it just feels...
Well, then the goal would be for the smart candidates to see that this is happening and up their game of personal connection.
Yeah.
To say, listen, we're not sending stuff out. We're ready to go. All right, it's Friday. We're going to end things on a up note with Dairyland Diaries. That is our Friday feature that comes your way next on Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right now, how can you not be happy when you hear that? Because not only are we going to talk about some really great stuff all around the state, but it's Friday. And
it is Friday.
And this is our last segment, so.
Time to jump around. Not that we're not happy to be working.
Of course,
but it's not,
we always are.
Listen, we have the same feelings that you do when the end of the day comes on Friday. Our end of the day just comes when your day is
starting. A little earlier than yours, yeah.
But that's all right. Yes, it is Dairyland Diaries. Let's get started because we have three great stories today. This comes from West De Pere. The West De Pere High School Principal, Russ Gerke, was named 2026 Wisconsin High School Principal of the Year. Yay! When Gerke walked into the West De Pere High School gym to receive his surprise statewide award, the bleachers exploded with the noise of over 1,000 students whooping and hollering in celebration. That has to feel good as an educator.
That's awesome.
He is a West De Pere grad. He's led West De Pere High School for over 20 years. Now, he was chosen from a pool of 15 Herb Cole Education Foundation awarded outstanding principals across the state and surprised with the announcement on April 10th. Gerke said, "I am proud of being a West De Pere grad, and I'm proud that each and every one of you are going to graduate." He was talking to the kids. "We are alumni together. Now, three generations of family and dozens of friends and colleagues from his decades in education filled the school's black and orange seats to help him celebrate." Now, Gerke, they say, is devoted to the school and its community, and former West De Pere superintendent Lanny Tibaldo said that he was a factor that was the factor that got Gerke hired.
Nice.
"Staying in that role has helped teachers and the rest of the community buy into his decision-making and the changes that he has put into place at West De Pere High. Over 20 years, he has put in a lot of changes and made a lot of decisions. He's focused on increasing the opportunities available to students, from alternative education pathways to a trades academy to connections with local colleges, all of which sound not only groundbreaking, but fantastic for the students." And that is definitely a student-focused guy. So congratulations, Russ Gerke, West De Pere High School, the 2026 Wisconsin High School Principal of the Year. That's a good story on a Friday.
I love that. Congratulations.
We love to celebrate educators.
I love educators. I think they're some of the most important people in this world. Speaking of people doing really great things, Time Magazine's annual list of the 100 most influential people of 2026 includes three people with strong Wisconsin connections. You got Olympic hockey champion and U.S. team captain Hillary Knight, a former University of Wisconsin-Madison star, actor Kate Hudson, who portrayed local singer Claire Sardina in the recent film Song Sung Blue, photojournalist Lindsay Addario, a UW alum renowned for documenting the lives of women and children in conflict zones. Now, grouped by Time in the innovators category, story. Hockey hero Knight is praised by none other than, boy, this is somebody to get praise from.
Good.
Wow. Nobel Peace Prize laureate Malala Yousafzai, who first summed up Knight's massive accomplishments on the ice. She said, quote, "The greatest player in the history of women's hockey holds all-time world championship records for goals, assists, and points, along with two Olympic gold medals." Now, we all watched this, right? Throughout the state, we were captivated because Knight scored the tying goal in Team USA's gold medal winning match against Canada, big rivals. That was back on February 19th. She is a five-time Olympian. She was also chosen as one of the United States flag bearers for the closing ceremonies. Then you got actor, writer, and producer Mindy Kaling, who wrote the tribute for Kate Hudson, who Time placed in the icons category. She praised Hudson's comedy chops and said that she's pretty incredible as a dramatic actress who can actually sing as well, as she proves in that new movie.
And yeah, then she was really good.
Oh, she was very, very good. Yeah. And then we have Adario, who is a Connecticut native. She graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison back in 1995. She won a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant in 2009 for all of her work that documents life in conflict areas, including photographs of refugee camps. Now, in her tribute essay, TV journalist Katie Couric, another pretty hefty name associated. She said, "In 2026, if 2026 has taught us anything, it's the power of images, the people and places, and Lindsay captures maybe strangers in foreign lands, but they remind us of our shared humanity." I love that.
Very nice. Congratulations, ladies. Yes. Ladies getting it done.
I love it.
Time
I love
influential
it. That's pretty
list.
Cool.
We like that very much. All right, our final story is sure to bring a smile to your face because it involves the Brewers racing sausages. And a little history, because they're not only at AmFam Field running around racing. No, they're out doing good. They're helping charities. They are ambassadors, if you will. One of my happiest moments was running into them in the parking lot going into Summerfest as they were donning their sausage gear, and I got a selfie with them in the parking lot. It was hilarious.
Best selfie ever.
it was great. So they're not just staples, like I said, at Brewers games. Now, here's a little history, though. You might not know, the original sausage race was a scoreboard sideshow of animated cartoon characters that entertained fans in 1992 at the Old County Stadium. Well, then, a live version of the famous racing sausages debuted on June 27th, 1993. Just three sausages, though. The Bratwurst, the Polish sausage, and the Italian sausage. They were racing from the left field corner on select Sundays during the season, so it wasn't an all-the-time thing. Here's a bad pun from the story. Fans relished the addition of the hot dog in 1997. Then they started in 1999. They started selling replicas of the racing sausages, became a hot online collectible. They had stuffed toys, T-shirts, caps, all the kind of things. Then in 2006, they added the Mexican chorizo, adorned with a sombrero and decked out in a red, green, and white. It spiced up the lineup. I'm still surprised that they get away with all of this, but they do. Good for them. In July of 2006, they became the Clements Racing Sausages. Milwaukee's Clements Sausage Company was a sponsor for 25 years until Johnsonville bought them out, and they're having a big 28th annual 5K and 10K for Brewers community, and it's the famous Racing Sausages. All right, Jamie, I'm done.
It is 8:59. We are done. You are listening to Daybreak. Thank you for another week. This is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.